We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
Good morning and welcome to Wrestling with the Basics. I'm Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark from Ascension Lutheran Church in St. Louis, Missouri.
And this is Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky from St. Paul's Lutheran Church in New Athens, Illinois, and Trinity Lutheran Church in Darmstadt, Illinois. And this is
Wrestling with the Basics.
Yeah, glad to be here. I have got some exciting things to share with you here, Matt.
Oh, good.
Well, I think it goes without saying that we are your source of all vegetable information.
Yes.
If you're looking for information about vegetables, you can't go any better than Wrestling with the Basics. But today we're also going to add something about financial investment as well. We may become the source of good financial guidance. But let me share this with you, because I've been thinking through this. You might remember back in the 50s when everybody was promoting cigarettes as being a really healthy thing to do, to smoke cigarettes.
No, I don't remember that. Because I am Matt Youngblood Clark. But I'm sure you remember that vividly, I'm sure.
Yes. As like a 2 or 3 year old, I remember my dad saying, here, puff. Have a puff. Have a puff, John.
It's good for you.
It's good for you. But so anyway, well, trust me, you know, back in the 50s, that's how they promoted cigarettes, because it was supposed to be a healthy product to smoke.
Yeah. Okay.
And so people smoked and they got addicted to cigarettes. My mom smoked until she died. Just give you an illustration of how people were hooked on the smoke. But then did you notice how all of a sudden tobacco prices increased and the price of cigarettes increased? It got higher and higher. So I thought, that's interesting. Then another thing I noted. So they were really pushing cars back in the 50s too. Everybody should. In fact, you should have two cars. Two car garage. That's what everybody dreamed. So we got addicted to automobiles and oil. And then did you notice all of a sudden what happened to oil prices?
Those went up too.
They got higher and higher. Now, of course, things have changed. Now we know that smoking is not a good thing, right? And well, cars, you know, the oil prices have gone down. But what I've noticed, you know what people are promoting now?
What are they promoting?
Vegetables. Everywhere you look, you should be having 3 or 4 servings. 5 would do you good. A day of vegetables. And I'm wondering, do you think there's some kind of economic cabal that goes around and promotes these things so they can end up making a lot of money? So they promoted the tobacco, and they made a lot of money off of that. They promoted the oil and made a lot of money off of that. And now...
the vegetables.
That's right.
Oh, maybe you're onto something.
I think I am. Because do you realize that right now, you know how much a head of cauliflower costs in Canada?
How much?
$8. I was reading this.
Eight bucks.
And I'm thinking it's starting to come. It's starting to happen.
Holy cow.
They're getting us addicted to these vegetables, and then they're going to just jack up the prices. It's good. The cabal is out there, people. They're manipulating the vegetable prices. But here's where, since you listen to Wrestling with the Basics, you will have an advantage.
Oh, please.
Because now that we know this, what you all need to do, sell your gold, get rid of your silver. Because who needs gold or silver? Honestly, have another helping of gold.
You can't eat gold or silver.
Exactly. That is my point. Thank you. You and I work together so well, because that's crystallizing my thought. But people are going to want vegetables. So right now, I have a garage full of cauliflower. And when the big shortage comes down here
in the States,
the Canadians are experiencing it right now, but it won't be long, and they're going to be jacking up the prices on cauliflower, and I'm going to be sitting pretty. So if you want to, that's my advice. Sell your gold and silver and start buying cauliflower.
So you're stockpiling the cauliflower so you get a lot of cabbage. And the cabbage is another thing for money.
Well,
maybe.
There you go. That's right.
Sheesh.
Oh, I like
that. And then you take it a step further. You know, cigarettes, you know, not healthy.
Yeah.
You know, oil pollution, not so healthy. Has the same foul with vegetables,
I bet it is.
Maybe down the road.
So you got to get the money now before they find out
the truth behind the veggies, the leafy greens.
I didn't think of that, but you're right. That's probably where it's
only
all
a matter
headed.
Of time. It's like dominoes falling.
Okay. Now, here's the other thing. Enough about that. But it is incredible. There's going to be a big vegetable shortage coming. Bananas, too. You might want to buy some bananas.
Stock up on bananas.
Because they're going out, too. I tell you what, it's all part of this cabal.
So why are they so expensive in Canada?
It's coming. There's a shortage. Of course,
so it's coming
really
from the north.
Shortage? Is there really a shortage?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. See? Well, But they're trying it out in Canada now, and if it works in Canada, it's going to be down here in the United States anytime soon. So you need to go out today and start buying it, because by next week it may be up there. It may be $8 a head. Who's to say? Anyway, so here's the thing. So Matt and I, we're doing all this stuff about Jesus, which is what we usually do.
That's what
we're
we usually
not talking
do.
About vegetables.
Yeah, sure.
Vegetables, Jesus, one or the other. And so we said, what did we say we were going to do today?
We were going to talk about the boy Jesus.
Right. And it sounded like a good idea.
Yes.
12-year-old in the temple.
Sure.
And I'm thinking Matt probably, when he suggested that, well, John probably preached on that text. That was the gospel lesson a couple weeks ago. And I was thinking, well, Matt probably preached on that a couple weeks ago. But what, Matt?
Neither one of us preached on it a couple weeks ago.
So we have no idea. But anyway, it's what we said we're going to do, so we're going to do it.
Oh, boy. Well, good. We can. Yeah, this will be good, though.
You think?
I think it'll be just fantastic. And as we look at this, I think it's a unique text because it's really the only time we get a glimpse into Jesus' childhood.
It is. It's the only childhood story we have him, isn't it?
Yeah.
Other than those stories about how he would make the mud into a dove and it would fly away, or about how he would jump off the roof of his house and one of his friends tried to duplicate that, and his friend died when he hit the ground.
So well.
And then Jesus came and raised him from the dead and stuff. Those stories, of course, aren't in the Bible, but those are the kind of stories that were made up in the past.
Places like the Gospel of Thomas and other sources. Yeah.
But this is the only real true story we know about Jesus. You got it memorized? I'm looking at Matt. Matt doesn't have
where's
his Bible.
My Bible? No, I've got it out.
Oh, okay.
I'm ready to go.
All
but
right.
So we heard all about, and the reason we talked about doing this on Wrestling with the Basics is because we're sort of on a roll. We talked about Jesus' birth, around Christmas time. That's what we typically do. And then we have his circumcision and naming on the eighth day, which we talked about. And then we had his presentation at the temple, 40 days old. We talked about that. And the magi, whatever Lynn says is right.
Yeah.
They come and visit the child. And now, logically, in that timeline, this is the next thing we want to talk about. Because, from the time the magi come to the time Jesus is, 30 or so, in his baptism, we really don't hear a whole lot about Jesus. We really only hear this one account where he's 12 years old and in Jerusalem.
And so that was the logic, as you said.
Yes.
We thought, we'll just give you the whole story. Because, by the way, starting next Saturday, we'll be in the season of Lent.
That's correct.
And probably our focus will be more upon Jesus and, going into Jerusalem, suffering and death. Or we'll be getting there sooner or later.
Sure. Yeah, early this year.
So that was the plan. But, of course, neither one of us had ever, we hadn't looked at the story. So here, let me just start reading. Maybe I better get into this. Now his parents, that's Jesus' parents, went to Jerusalem every year at the Feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to custom. So anything you want to say about that matter?
Well, just that this account is sort of special to me right now as a father myself. Jesus going with his parents, of course, his earthly parents, Mary and Joseph. Jesus 12 years old. Our son Noah is 12 years old right
now.
That's
cool.
So it's kind of neat. As I read this account and picture Jesus, I've got sort of a picture at home of what that Jesus looked like with our 12-year-old.
That's a neat thought. That is a neat thought. And so 12-year-olds, what grade are they in then?
Sixth grade.
So has he started confirmation yet? When do they start confirmation there at Ascension?
Well, the big instruction, seventh and eighth grade, those years. But certainly, Bible class and Sunday school and the Christian day school he's at.
So he's on the cusp. So do you think our confirmation practice, because a lot of churches confirm 7th and 8th grade.
Yes.
Now, we sometimes would throw in a Noah because we don't have a lot of kids.
Sure.
So we get whoever we can get to make a class. Uh-huh. So sometimes we'll throw a 6th grader in there. Do you think it has anything? Is there any significance to the fact that he's 12 years old here? Is that a special age? Is it after 12 years old that kids start thinking on their own or something?
This account aside, I don't know if there's any connection to this Jesus in the temple, but just looking at, and I think it depends on the child. I think that's a good point, John. Some, depending on what instruction is taking place at home or how mature they are, some may be ready for instruction earlier, and especially I'm thinking of the Lord's Supper and the thinking that goes into that. So some are ready earlier, I would say, and yet You know, some maybe better to wait later. You know, really, when you think, when you look at it cognitively, what is the human brain ready for and at what time? And it's really not until those junior high years and even beyond that, you know, people progress from just concrete thinking to more abstract thinking. And certainly when it comes to the sacraments, there's some abstract things going on there. So for some, I think it's helpful to wait till they're a little older. That's just my opinion.
And for some of us, we have to get into our 60s before it really
and some of us never quite reach that abstract thinking point.
It depends on the individual. Now, that's a thought, though, too. In your church, Matt, do you, because I know some churches will offer the Lord's Supper after some education and then confirm. Our tradition is we confirm and then give them the Lord's Supper. What do you do at Ascension?
Well, we do offer, if we want to call it early communion, where we instruct in sixth grade specifically in what communion is. And part of the reason for that is I think so often people connect confirmation with First Communion. You know, you get confirmed, and then now I get to go
in
to
our tradition, at least.
Yeah, in our tradition among Lutherans, now I get to go to communion. And, you know, that's not necessarily what confirmation is all about. It's not just so I can take communion. No, it's this deeper knowledge of God's word. It's confessing in front of the church what it is that you believe. It's not just mom and dad's faith, but it's your faith. You know, this is what I believe now. So to commune early, if you have a right understanding of what the Lord's Supper is, sure, that's fine. And then you have that benefit, of course, you know, as you're being instructed in the small catechism and the basic teachings of the faith. But I mean, again, you know, there's nothing clearly mandated in Scripture. We have the freedom as congregations and pastors and families to determine what the best practice is, perhaps in our context.
And you know, I appreciate you saying this, because this is not supposed to be legislation here.
No,
this is not supposed to say, oh, 12 years old, that's a special time. You know, it's typical Luke. He's a historian. He loves to give you the facts and data that confirm. Yeah. I'm not telling you a myth here. I'm not giving you a fable. No. He was actually 12 years old when they went there. And that's when things started to kick in for Jesus. It might be a little earlier for some. Well, of course, it's Jesus. Probably wouldn't be any earlier. He's the Son of God, you know.
Yeah.
Some of us, like I said, it might be a little later. This age of accountability in the Old Testament. Do you know what? See, again, I'm sorry. We didn't preach on this. So does it have anything to do with the age of accountability?
Well,
what age was that? Do you know?
Maybe like a, you know, like a bar mitzvah or something, you say?
Well, exactly.
Yeah, you know,
is it 12 years old?
You know, it's around that age. And,
okay.
But I think you bring up a good point that this account, you know, sometimes we use these terms, it's descriptive rather than prescriptive. So this is simply descriptive in Jesus' case, what's taking place as Luke perhaps interviews Mary even to get this background.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily prescriptive that at the age of 12 or this certain age, we have to do certain things in the life of our child.
And a mom would remember that.
Oh, she'd remember this account sure.
I remember when he was 12 years old, and I could just see Mary saying that.
Let me tell you, Luke.
You know,
have yourself a seat. This is going to take a while.
All right. And when the feast was ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it. Children, please let your parents know if you're staying behind in Jerusalem. This is a descriptive story. This is not supposed to be an example for you to follow.
And they're going every year to this Passover, to this feast. You know, can you believe that? You know, it was what? How far from Jerusalem to Nazareth? You know, it's
3 day journey.
It's like 70 miles, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and they did it every year. And so think of what that meant for the family to take time off of work over at the carpenter business, the carpenter shop, you know, closed for the Passover, and to go down to Jerusalem. What that impression that made on the children and the families involved with that this is a priority in our life so much that we're making this 3 day journey one way to do it, to go to the temple.
Oh, and now you're making me think there is an example here. Well, seriously, we need to take this stuff serious with our kids, and that it is an important thing we're doing. It's not just an obligation or requirement, but it's something, well, actually something we really want to do. We want to go down there because it is an important thing to remember the Passover and to be at the temple and make the sacrifices that need to be made. So any other comment about that? Because
Go right ahead.
But supposing him to be in the group, they went a day's journey. So he's 12 years old. And that, see, that's another important factor. At that age, yeah, I'm going to go over to Bobby's. I'm going to spend the night at Sammy's house. You know, yeah. We do that.
Sure.
The kids are a little freer. You let Noah spend the night at people's houses?
Yeah, and he's at buddy's over at our house, too. And sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as going on there, verse 44, they began to search for him among their relatives and acquaintances.
Yeah.
So they're with the whole gang from Nazareth. They went down together. There's safety in numbers.
Yep.
And, you know, for this journey, you want to make sure you're safe.
There really are robbers out there.
And yet they still went. And yet they still went. That's that important.
We won't go because it's too cold.
Yeah. We're not going to church. It's too cold. Yeah. And it's only a mile away, not 3 days away.
And we're not going on foot on the back of a donkey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry. We're just complaining, people. We're pastors. What do you want from us?
But so they're among friends. They're doing what we would do. If we made this journey, we'd probably travel with some of our family members, friends. Let's go down together, you know. They'll split the cost of the inn down in Jerusalem. So
striking difference, though, by the way. See, at Christmas time, they weren't going to celebrate any kind of festival. They were going to fulfill a legal
census,
obligation.
Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
yeah. So, okay.
So, yeah. So, as far as we can tell, and Christmas and going to Bethlehem, you know, they were on their own. But here, very different. This is an annual event, family and friends. And they're among company, good company. And
I give you a concrete example. Next week, my wife is going to go to jury duty at Belleville. I'm not going with her. On the other hand, if we were going for like a birthday party or something in Belleville, I would accompany her. Okay. I hope we've made it perfectly clear to you now the difference between this and Christmas.
Yeah, I'm sure that cleared everything up. Your jury duty example.
All right.
No, but that's a good point. This legal obligation versus this family
event.
Very good.
And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem searching for him. So the logical thing is he's got to be he's over at Bob's house or Uncle Joe's or whatever. Well, he's not there. Well, I guess he's still in Jerusalem. Okay, go ahead. You want me to keep reading or are there?
No, go ahead.
All right,
because
here it gets to the interesting part. After 3 days, so think about that. Matt, I remember once John got separated from me in the Sears store.
Oh, that's a terrible feeling.
And it probably was only 10 minutes, if that much.
Yeah.
And we finally found him. One of the clerks had taken him back into the clerk room, so we were just, can you imagine 3 days and not finding Noah?
Oh, my goodness. 3 seconds. Your heart kind of jumps as a parent, not knowing where they're at. Ugh, 3 days.
So it had to be. Well, it just explains why Mary says what she says in the next verse.
Well, and I wonder if Mary had extra stress about that too, knowing that this was, as the angels promised, the Son of God.
Oh,
you know,
no.
I lost the Son of God.
as a grandparent,
I better find this kid.
As a grandparent, I kind of understand that because sometimes we've watched the grandchildren and lost them too. And it's one thing to lose your own kid, but you lose someone else's kid. But yeah, this is the Son of God we've lost. Oh, man, are we going to have to... What kind of explanation will we give when we get back home?
Note to self, do not let Pastor Jolly John babysit our kids. He's losing them all.
So after 3 days... let's see. They returned to Jerusalem. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. So, what about that, Matt?
Is that where most junior high kids would be? Sitting there among the teachers and the scribes and listening and talking.
Yeah.
They're in the temple still, of all places.
Yeah. Because most of the confirmation kids, they're just wanting to get out of the class and go someplace else, watch TV, play their video games.
Yeah.
But
not Jesus.
Not Jesus. No, he's there.
Because
he's
there, and he's there for a purpose, as we'll see. Yeah, Jesus is unique.
Okay. And when his parents saw him, they were astonished, which seems to be a word that crops up a lot in the Gospel of Luke. Because I know when Jesus preaches in Capernaum, the people were astonished. Isn't that what people said when the shepherds told the story?
Astonished.
They're astonished. Which, by the way, is not a good word. it doesn't equate faith. Mm-hmm. It equates mm-hmm. the recognition that this is something spectacular, but it's the opposite of faith. There isn't, well, I wouldn't say the opposite. It could become maybe the seed of faith. It might be mm-hmm. a foundation, mm-hmm. but there's no faith here. They don't believe that there's anything special. It's just, isn't that amazing that this kid knows that much? You know, he must be one of them,
prodigies?
Prodigies. That's the word I was looking for. All right, very good. Okay. Oh, and his mother said, and when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us so?" And you can just hear Mary saying that, can't you?
Yeah, of course.
"Behold, your father and I." It's always your father and I. Yeah, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress. Now, any comment you want to make on that before we get back to the smart aleck response at Jesus?
Oh, Jesus. Well, we Jesus is under the law here, you know, and we think of the fourth commandment, honor your father and mother, of course, and what's going on here, what's the deal, is he breaking the commandment?
Yeah.
And Mary, we see, I think, the heart of a mother here too, her love, her concern, her distress even over where her son is. And so when she gets there, she addresses Jesus. She lets him know what's been going on, their great distress.
And he said to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my Father's?" And this much I do remember from previous study. Mm-hmm. Here it says house. Some places it says business, doesn't it? Some translations say about my Father's business.
Yes.
But I remember distinctly, it actually doesn't say in the Greek. It literally says, "I must be about my Father's."
About my Father's.
Yeah. Yeah, and it doesn't specify what it is, but it's just something about his Father. That's what it was all about.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And I, what's so interesting, as I page through these pages of the Gospel of Luke, these are the first letters that are written in red in my Bible.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So these are Jesus' first recorded words.
Oh, and so what's the first thing Jesus would want us to know?
First thing Jesus wants us to know is, why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my Father's house, or like as you point out, about my Father's business? And I really think that that's one way in which to look at Jesus' whole life and ministry, that he's about his Father's business. He's about his Father's work. That's why he's come. For God so loved the world that he sent that only Son. We think of even in the Garden of Gethsemane then, before his arrest and crucifixion, that he's praying to the Father, "Father, not your will, not my will, but yours be done." He's about his Father's business. And already here, 12 years old, he's still about his Father's business.
Yeah, I would like to translate it, "I must be about my Father's stuff." Okay.
Yeah.
That's the official Lukumsky. When I do my Bible translation.
That's not in the King James, I don't think. My Father's stuff.
That's
thy Father's stuff in the King James.
But because it's a reminder that you're not gonna limit it to one thing. No, that's the whole ball of wax, and everything I'm doing in obedience to my Father. Why am I gonna heal the sick? Because that's my Father's stuff. Why am I casting out demons? Because that's my Father's stuff. But ultimately, the big stuff of my Father is what he has commanded me to do, to give my life as a ransom for many. Yeah. That's the Father's stuff. So, Mom, you need to know everything. You need to know it now. You're in distress now. Wait until you stand at the foot of my cross.
Yeah.
You're going to, your heart will be pierced also. We did that, didn't we?
We did.
From Simeon. But Mom, and everyone listening to us right now, remember everything that Jesus is doing in your life is all about the Father's stuff. And the Father's stuff is always good. It may be discipline, it may be painful, but in the end, it's always good, and it's always intended for our benefit and our blessing.
And as children of the Heavenly Father, our lives are about the same thing, being about our Father's stuff. As his forgiven children, everything, the whole ball of wax, as you said, our lives are about being about our Father's stuff.
Because that is the stuff of the Father, isn't it? The forgiveness of sins, the life everlasting, the place in heaven. That's the Father's stuff. So, well, that actually worked out pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Jesus is 12 years old. Jesus in junior high. What can we learn from him?
God's blessings to everybody. We hope you have a blessed Ash Wednesday coming up.